Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach Chamber 360, on August 31st, 2018. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And, of course, joining us today as producer and co-host, the president and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber, Mr. Mark Lipps. And, of course, with us because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, Mark, how are you guys doing today?
It's Friday.
It's really Friday for you. Yeah, it is Friday, and it's going into a long weekend. And, I'm loving it. I just want to kick back. I don't think I have any really huge plans. So I think I may just, like, add 2 pounds, 3 pounds maybe.
I like it. Well, my long weekend is going to stretch into an extra long week because I'm going on a little trip next week. I'm very excited about it.
Okay. Now, I know you're headed north. Where are you going?
Going to Kalispell, Montana with a girlfriend. We're going up. We're just flying into Kalispell. We're staying at a resort a little south of it, and we're going up for it's a poker week up there. One of the poker stars, world poker tour stars, Todd Runson, he does this week long. It's like a poker camp.
Yeah.
And they're
I hear the girls are just flocking to that.
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised
really?
How many of these things. Yes. Yes. When
I think of the girls' trip, because I'm thinking of my wife and others, I don't think that would even be in the top 50 to run off to a poker tournament in Montana for my wife. I mean, so you're a poker – I'm not sure I knew that, but now it makes sense, but you're a poker player then.
I have always been. I've been a poker player my whole life. My daddy taught
me
at his age. Yeah.
I don't think you can leave Long Island without being a poker player. So you're going to go up there, but you're just going to play in surrounding games. You're not competing, or do you compete? Other than in your game, you compete, but do you compete against other tables, or do you get eliminated, in other words?
Well, it's. Have you ever seen the poker games on TV from Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just like that. It's just like that. There's a bunch of tables, and people are playing, and people eventually get knocked out, and they combine the tables. You know, as the competitors get smaller and smaller, and you end up with your final table, and then
competing. You can get eliminated.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not just running out of money like in a normal game. This is. You're trying to win.
When you get eliminated, you ran out of money. You know, that's when you're eliminated is when you run out of
money. Right,
right.
Okay, right. True.
It's the same format, but this is a week-long – it's a learning experience, and you learn by playing. Mm. And throughout the week, there are just games going on all the time. And you can sit in, or you don't have to. I personally, I'm bringing my rod and reel. I'm going to be doing some fly fishing. You know, if I'm in the mood to play, I'll play. If I'm not in the mood to play,
I'll
go.
You're just breaking all the glass ceilings.
Well,
now you're fly fishing.
Another
thing that didn't end up on the top 50 list with my wife going somewhere to do.
Well, let me tell you something. If your wife tried
she'll cook that fish for you.
She'll cook that fish. Well, if your wife tried it, I bet she would love it. It's
could be.
top mm-hmm. half dozen things that I love to do. You know, if I'm going to go on vacation, if I have an opportunity to go fly fishing, my husband and I do a big fly fishing trip every year, a different part of the country. We love it. But this trip, it's funny because my girlfriend, Missy, she goes every year. We met at a poker tournament years and years ago, and we've been fast friends since. And we play at all the local tournaments in the South Bay together.
Okay, so she lives here.
Yeah, she lives here. And we go to the poker tournament at the 900 Club every year. We go to the Hermosa Beach Firefighters has a poker tournament every year as a fundraiser. There are several.
Oh, by the way, Michael's Learning Place has a poker tournament coming up.
Yes, I saw that.
You could probably take all their money.
Well, no, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised because the big serious ringers poker tournaments. I went to the one
again
this
year. Well, that's their job, right? I mean.
Yeah, I went to the one again this year at the 900 Club, and I was sitting at a table with nine ringers. I mean, all really, really professional poker players.
So
I'm
curious. I'm playing poker. Okay. I mean, you have these cards. You know what makes a good hand or if you have a good hand. What is it that sets one poker player off from another? Why is one person, when you say a ringer, what do they have that, I mean, everybody knows what a full house is, what a four of a kind is. What is it, and this is the naivety of me coming out, because I've always been lucky at love, never at gambling. And what is it that sets one person off from the other?
It's a number of things. First off, it's the cards you get. All right, so there is an element of luck involved there.
Okay.
But it's a lot of these people have cojones. You know, they'll do something that you just don't expect, or, you know they'll go
so
all in.
You mean bluffing and
yeah. Yeah, well, you have to have some nerves of steel to do a lot of what these guys do.
Like
and
what?
Then
you mean all in, that sort of thing, saying, okay, I'm all in? Or,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Be ready to lose it all.
Going in with a pair of twos, going all in with a pair of twos.
So they're just throwing their weight around because they can afford to lose where maybe the person across from you can't. They know that, so they're going on.
No one can afford to lose all in.
No. What it is intimidating people.
Right.
When you sit at a table and somebody's going all in, say you got a pair of kings, and on the first round somebody goes all in, you're like, oh shoot, what do they have, a pair of aces? There's intimidation factors, and then there's also reading the other players. You know, other players have tells.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so there's a bunch of it's very intricate. There's a lot going on, but then you could have somebody that shows up at the table that doesn't know a damn thing and just throw everybody's game off.
Well,
I did read,
the rookie comes in and just, he's just there and willing to lose and go crazy.
It's like having that person sit at the end of the blackjack table that screws everybody up. They don't know what they're doing. You know, the dealer showing a four and they take a hit. You know, they have a two, there's a lot going on. Yeah.
So, and I think I read something about these guys too, is just like sports teams, they will study previous tournaments and watch for tells on people they know they're going to be playing against. And they start building a dossier or, you know, a whole profile on their competitors.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the guys at the high levels, the professionals.
Yeah. Why do they let guys wear sunglasses? Why do they let poker players wear sunglasses? I would think that, you know, everybody should have to show their eyes. Everybody should have to.
No,
you know,
that's one of eyes are one of the big tells. They're allowed,
I know.
You know,
so why don't they make it, make them not wear sunglasses?
Nobody said poker is fair. You know.
All right.
You know.
So you'll be wearing sunglasses at the table
and a hoodie.
I don't. And any earphones, right? I see those guys. They have their earbuds in with sunglasses and a hoodie, and you're like, are they even paying attention? No,
yeah,
I don't.
Are they getting signals from somebody? That's what I would worry about.
There you go. I don't wear sunglasses. I'm a pretty low key player. I'm not boisterous. You know, there are people at the table that can be really loud and obnoxious.
Quit talking about me. This is what I would. That would be. See, that would my tell. I couldn't do it. People would love. Oh, I so want to play with Mark Lips. You know, he could have 2 twos and be excited. Wow, two of the same kind. Oh, okay, calm down, Mark. Calm down. You know, and they're just all over there going, But
yeah.
It might work for me because they're going, how can he be so excited about that if it's just two twos? It must be four twos. He's too excited. I'm folding. You know, it might actually work for me. So what I should do is just be excited. I should just be excited about everything. That way they won't know. I don't have a clue what Mark thinks.
They will have no idea.
He thinks
the
single ace is the best thing in the world. What the heck? So
I think I have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
I have a clue what Mark thinks. I'm just looking at Happy Friday Neighbors.
I read
like
it this morning.
A deep dive into the mind of Mark Lips. It's scary.
Is a deep dive. Yeah.
I have to tell you something about Happy Friday Neighbors, your newsletter. You know, it's so funny. When I'm out and about the South Bay and I meet new people and they always come up to me and they say, oh, my goodness, I get your weekend guide. I love it. I get comfortable. You know, I get rid of all the other stuff I have to deal with. And then I get my coffee and I sit down and I take my time and I read it, you know, paragraph by paragraph. And they just love it. That's how I feel about your Happy Friday Neighbors newsletter. It's like,
see, I thought you were going to say, and they tell me, oh, they love it. They get it every weekend. They read it, blah, blah, blah. And we love it that you call it Happy Friday Neighbors.
that's how I feel. That's how I feel about your newsletter, you know, because I have to toil over mine. But I get one in the mail every Friday morning, in my email every Friday morning, and I get to sit back and relax and read what's going on in Manhattan Beach, which I really enjoy.
Well, thank you. It doesn't even touch, you know, it's the tip of the iceberg of what's going on. I mean, yours is much more comprehensive in that area. I'm kind of all over the board, you know. Some like that dog picture was a lady I ran into on our street who just got a puppy. I mean, I know the family. They just got a little puppy. So that's their new member of the family, that they have.
Ollie.
And, And then that house. A friend of mine used to live in that house, rent that house, and it's because it's a regular house right now. But back in the 60s and early 70s, it was a general store right there in the 500 block of Rosecrans. And I got it off Manhattan Beach Haunts, which is a great little Facebook group. And people post up, and one lady, I mean, a lot of them must be 80 years old that are posting things because they're going, remember when we used to go to that little general store on Rosecrans? What was it called? And then people start going, oh, that was Red's. Red was so great, you know, and all that. And then one lady was saying, yeah, and it was just crazy, that crazy garage band next door. And then someone said, you know, that was the Doors. You know, I mean, it was just really fun history. But the Doors used to practice because it was Mandrick's aunt or mom or something lived right next door, and they would all practice there at the house, and everybody would, you know, that band next door, you know. And it was the Doors in the early days. So.
Fun.
Now,
kind of fun.
I have to ask you, Mark, one more thing about Happy Friday, the Impossible Burger. Tell me about that.
Oh, I got it. Well, Google Impossible Burger because I did it. They actually have
one.
It listed
I've
as the Impossible Burger at this restaurant. That's where Mermaids used to be, and now there's this restaurant in there, Slater 50/50.
Slater's 50/50.
Pride themselves on that. You know, 50% meat and then 50% bacon. Oh, holy cow! You know, literally holy cow and pig and the. But so my friend, you know, there wasn't much fish on the menu. There was some pokey, but I was tired of pokey. And they said, oh, you don't eat meat. And they pull out this little teeny menu, and it's their vegetarian menu. And they have what on there they're promoting as the Impossible Burger. And I thought, oh, they're calling it the, but no, that's the brand. And so,
right.
you know, so I ordered it, and I got to tell you, it's, I mean, geez, if you're looking for the texture and the feel and the you know, like meat, that they do a really great job. And I Googled
and,
it, and it's a whole,
yeah.
it's a whole company and who makes these plant-based
ImpossibleFoods.com. ImpossibleFoods.com. When you eat that, were you hungry hours later after eating that?
Well, I think I'm always hungry hours later, but, I mean, yeah, I mean,
it was filling. I mean, I just think some veggie burgers are quite light and airy and so forth. Mm-hmm. This one really felt like eating meat. It was really good.
Oh, so you had it?
I have. They're at,
okay.
Island. They have Impossible Burgers
at
Islands.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is my first experience. So, and then you have to look at how they're made. I mean, some you know you have your black bean veggie burgers. You have your different ones. You know, if you go to the spot, they make their own veggie burger. If you go to Veggie Grill, they get theirs from
tofu.
Tofu. No, in El Segundo. There's a company in Beyond Meat. I think it's called Beyond Meat.
Beyond Meat, and, yes, sir. That's
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who supply all the veggie grills with their burgers, and they do a good job too. And you know, but this was really best I've ever had. So
right. I'll have to try
right.
it. I'll have to try
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So well. I mean, if you go to Slater's 5050, I'm sure it sounds like you can get it other places, too. Maybe go into Impossible Foods and see where else it is. But
I
and it's
go
interesting,
to Manhattan
those got
to
be
Island.
Short-term leases with Slater's 5050 and Playa.
Why?
Well, because they're putting a hotel there.
Oh.
Yeah, eventually,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I know those
yeah.
are all short-term leases. So,
well,
and if you look, you'll see Slater's has there's a big food truck. So I think they're really in the food truck business, or maybe they and have this restaurant temporarily. But they have their big food truck out front of it beside.
Well, speaking
it.
since you brought up Slater's right there,
mm-hmm.
just off the corner of Pier Boulevard by the Pier Avenue by the Hermosa Pier, I just wanted to mention. I know Joe saw it in my weekend guide. Yesterday, but last week I did an audio walking tour of Hermosa Beach, experience GPS tours, and it was fantastic.
Really?
It's about a 70. Well, they do like a free preview one, and then they have a full tour, 75-minute tour, and it's normally $9.99, but right now it's only 99 cents because they're looking to get some buzz and get people to do reviews, you know, on their website.
Mm-hmm.
So I did it, and it centers around the music scene in Hermosa over the last 100 years.
Hmm.
And you start at the base of the Hermosa Beach, you put your earbuds in, and there's a little preview. Well, before the tour starts, they give you some information on how to use the app. The full tour is broken up into 6 chapters. You start at the base of the Hermosa Beach Pier. They give you a little history of Hermosa, and then you start this walking tour. And right next to where Slater's is, where that parking lot is, used to be a place called Zuko's. And it was a big music spot. And the tour takes you no further than 2 or 3 blocks north, east, and south. So it's not like, you know, you're trudging miles or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really easy tour. And you go in and around Hermosa Beach, and you go to all of these places. And on your phone or your tablet are historical pictures. You know, so you're standing there looking at the empty lot, and then you look at your phone, you see what Zuko's used to look like. And you're listening, and it's telling you all about it. And you know, and then, of course, the lighthouse, and then the old Baptist church where the punk scene.
Yeah, that's where Black
Hermosa.
Flag and all those guys.
Yeah,
church.
Yeah, and then. And you walk down to the other park where the Biltmore used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The Beach Boys played there with the Del Airs. It was really, really well done. The narration was fantastic.
Wow.
They get
What's the name of the company?
It's called Experience GPS Tours. And you go on your phone, you look for it in the app, right, in your app section. and you download it for free. And then right now they just have two tours up of Formosa, the free preview and then the 75-minute one. And as I said, it's only 99 cents right now. So do it. I highly recommend it. And then they on the tour, they even have you going into some buildings where some little history still exists, you know,
right.
Like, you know, where the Abigail is used to be, where this Baptist church was, where all these punk bands practiced and lived. And there's interesting history. Like, you walk by, like, the Yak and Yeti, and they tell you, go on in. They're expecting you, you know. So I imagine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I highly recommend it. Do it. You'll love it, Mark. You'll really like it because there's all these great little history tidbits that you probably don't know about. You know,
wow.
You wouldn't know about it. So, and as I said, it goes back 100 years.
I love that. I love that. That's I've got to. I'm going to go on there and take a look at that. You know, the best, absolutely the best, most eye-opening, most interesting tour like that. Of course, we had a guide. It wasn't. I'm sure there's probably an audio tour, but we had a guide. And he had a picture book with him, which shows I did the Venice walking tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, you will go, holy cow, what this place used to be at the turn of the 20th century, turn of the 19th century into the 20th century, up until like 1925. And that's when it became incorporated by the city of Los Angeles. But the first sushi place, you know, the reason it was Venice because it had been developed and there were canals everywhere,
right,
all
right.
Over Venice. I mean, and they led out onto piers where big shows were, and there was one where a train would come right out, and the performer literally stepped off the train onto the stage on the, you know, at the pier where everybody, and I mean, all of the underground, you know, back then women couldn't walk around on the Strand or, you know, on the boardwalk in swimsuits. So all the Waldorf and, I mean, not Waldorf, but the Ritz-Carlton and, the really expensive hotels that were all there had elevators that took them down to a tunnel, and the tunnel led out and popped up on the beach. And that's how they got out to the beach. And then later on in Prohibition, those tunnels were used to bring in whiskey off the Canadian boats, you know, into and they're beginning to open, because they all had speakeasies, and they're beginning to open some of those tunnels now too, and go in there and clean them out.
Yeah, right. I'm really hoping that this guy Adam, it's his company. This tour is very specific, as I said. It gives you a well-rounded picture of Formosa, you know, the bikers used to hang out there and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it focuses on the music, and that's specifically Formosa. But I'm really hoping that he does these for all of the – every
right.
city in the South Bay has its own little history. You know, Lomita has the railroad. And, you know,
right.
there's a ton of history. And I really hope that he – well, his plan is he's doing more, obviously. But I really hope that he gets several more up and running in the South Bay, because there's
right.
so much history that, you know, unfortunately a lot of things are torn down, things change.
Yeah.
But he really did his homework with the Historical Society, getting all of these photographs, which
okay,
I love.
Okay, so that he worked with the Historical Society?
Yeah. I think he worked with the Historical Society, some history professors at
oh,
the
man.
Schools.
Oh, man, I've got
yeah,
to...
he got a bunch of stuff. And there's hundreds of pictures in each chapter.
Well, I got to call this guy and maybe hook him up, have a meeting here with our Historical Society and see if there's something worth doing here in Manhattan Beach, because those are great visitor opportunities.
Oh, absolutely. Totally. You know? He has to do Torrance. Torrance has a ton of history, and Torrance, fortunately, still has a lot of the older buildings. You know, Torrance still has quite a few of the older buildings. So, you know, in addition to El Segundo, El Segundo has, oh my goodness, El Segundo has a history. So, check out Experience GPS Tours. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Wow. The only thing you can't do in Hermosa and Manhattan Beach right now is take that tour on an e-scooter.
Well.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
On a shared e-scooter.
No.
Now, if you wanted to have your own e-scooter or go rent one, that's one thing. But one that you could just dockless, where you just drop it off, you can't do that.
So is
well,
that,
I have
is that the
Is that the difference, Mark? I mean, you can ride
yeah.
any personal conveyance vehicle of your own,
yeah.
but you can't, but just
right.
we don't
it's
want
the
those
shared,
companies
it's the
dropping them off.
Yeah, because yeah. it's the shared programs where they're just dropping them in the middle of the sidewalk.
They're
I'm
dockless.
Done.
Yeah.
I've gotten
they're,
to where I'm going. It's dockless. I'm where I needed to be. I'm just going to lean it against the building. Someone else can grab it. That's what they're trying to stop.
Yeah, and by the way, Torrance just banned them this earlier this week. El Segundo finally put a moratorium on them.
Right,
Manhattan,
right.
Manhattan Beach banned them.
Yep.
And Manhattan Beach,
right.
I was reading, I got the press release from the police department. I was reading, and it was like, you can't even operate one. So if you get one from another city and bring it down, you can't even operate.
Yeah, boom. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. You can't do that. We don't want them. You can drop them at the edge, walk into town, then go back and get it if it's still there. But you can't bring
there.
It into our city. But I think Hermosa did the same thing, didn't they?
I haven't
they banned?
Heard about it
I thought they
I
banned e-scooters, too. I think they were a week before we did. And then
we
did it at last week's council meeting. And all of us are – it's not that we're going to – you know, this ban is going to be forever. We're all trying to want time to discuss it and study it and figure out – because, for instance, San Francisco – just aligned with, you know, because we all hear about Lime and Bird as the two main billion-dollar scooter companies, right? San Francisco, and I'm trying to remember the name of it, but San Francisco just did a deal with a company I've never heard of. And so I'm curious what their business plan is. I got to find that out because, you know, I think that's what it is we just don't like the business plans, the business models of these current those two big companies, Lime and Bird.
Well, first off, I think it's a terrific idea, specifically for that last mile, you know, commute. If you're taking a train or a bus, or you park your car and you got to walk five blocks, I'm okay with it. But it can't be dockless. I don't know why they have an issue with putting docks in. Like in New York, they have the city bike, and they have docks for these city bikes all over the city, and it's super popular. So I guess they're just trying to save money by not having docks for them.
Well,
you know?
No, that's exactly what it is. That's what we're saying, their business model. And we believe, exactly as you just said, that there needs to be locations. There needs to be stations.
Right.
You could have one on the north end. You could have one downtown. You could have one at Pollywog Park. You could have one at, you know, Manhattan Village or someplace. But there have to be places that these scooters have to go back to. And
exactly.
And my suggestion was talk to the hotels because they all have bike rental programs. Talk to the hotels. The stations are already there in place. Find a way. And, you know, you got the Seaview Inn on the north end that supplies bikes. You got Shea that supplies bikes. You got the Marriott or Westdrift that supplies bikes. You got Best Western Plus. They supply bikes. You know, all of these hotels have bikes. And for their guests, why not have them create the business of, or maybe they could even line up with one of the companies and be the home base for these scooters. So,
yeah.
And then the other thing people are worried about is, you know, there's been a proliferation of these scooters is, if you know, we had to nip it in the bud because, you know, like I said before in another Friday call is, I mean, we have pictures of them on Sepulveda. A guy on Sepulveda on his electric scooter with no helmet in the middle lane cruising down Sepulveda. I mean, that's crazy. And so people are on sidewalks, and that's crazy. So you're not supposed to be on the bike path, and people are on the bike path and those things. So we can't let it get to where it's so saturated that it becomes really a safety issue.
It's already a safety issue. Listen to what I saw. Driving through, I was in Manhattan Beach 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, and I'm driving up, I think, Highland, and saw what might have been, she might have been a 13 or 14-year-old girl riding the scooter, standing up with a younger boy. He might have been 10 or 11, sitting at her feet, no helmets in the street.
Oh, my gosh. See?
Yeah, and I thought, whoa, okay.
And then the other thing we you know, when you're a small beach community, the other thing you have to think about is, do I have the resources to stop this? You say, well, arrest those guys. You know, send a message, blah, blah, blah. Well, geez, you know, there's only so many policemen we've got out at any one time patrolling our And then when you this is why sometimes people get upset, you know, why did he let that particular offense go and went after that offense, even though it was a bigger offense? Yeah. Well, the thing is, every police person, when they stop someone and they give a parking ticket, but if they have to write somebody up, they have to go back and do reports and all of this stuff. And after a while, you got to put a value on your time, you know. Should I go around and look for speeders in cars, or should I spend all my time busting e-scooters, you know? And, you know, so it's resources, too. The cities have to figure out, okay, if we're going to enforce this and we're going to put these rules in place, how do we manage it? I mean, look, you know, we said no smoking, and we still have people who go out and smoke, but there aren't enough police out there to really start – you know, ticketing people who are smoking. They're not, you know.
Yeah.
Now, Mark,
well,
I just want to do a quick station break, and then we'll be back. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, and we're having a chamber chat with the president and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber, Mr. Mark Lipps, and we're going to be talking more about what's going on in the city of Manhattan Beach and what's going on with these e-scooters and lots of other things. And we'd love for you to join us if you can. Are we going to give out the phone number, Jackie?
Yeah, sure.
If you're listening live, give us a call, 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. Take it away, Jackie.
All right. Okay. So, Mark, since we're still talking about the scooters, I posted the information that Manhattan Beach Police Department sent me. And a woman, you know, I posted all over social media, and I think it was on Facebook.
Right.
A woman made a comment that she just returned. They were in San Diego for a vacation for a week. And she said the entire city is littered with them. She said it is so awful. She said it's so awful. She said they're just laying on the street, not even propped up against a building, just laying in the middle of the street, you know, on curbs and doorways. And she said it was terrible. She said, I'm glad that you know, Manhattan Beach banned them. And as you said, Hermosa, Manhattan, El Segundo, Torrance. I haven't heard anything about Redondo yet. Have you?
Mm-mm. No, I haven't heard about Redondo. Bill Brand. No, that was the social ordinance. That's what he was.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he vetoed.
Yeah. And that's what hindsight, you know, you always want to be early adopters of things, so you're thought of as progressive and all of that, but some cases it's best not to be. You know, let Santa Monica experiment with the scooters and all of that and then see what happens, and that's what happened. You know, they were littered. Then El Segundo was littered, and then El Segundo backtracked and said, forget it, never mind, no scooters, because they saw what was happening. And we, of course, in the South Bay saw all those things. We said, no, we got to stop this before it gets to that point here. And they made preemptive strikes in the fact that they reached out to Lime and Bird and told them, had meetings with them and said, okay, just want to let you know. And, you know, the most famous comment is the one from Steve Napolitano to, I think it was Lime. And he said, you know, if be careful about trying to do what you did in El Segundo, because you may find the scooters at the end of the pier. You know,
So I think they have a place. It just needs to be regulated. It needs to be laws need to be enforced. You know, as we all know, there are still plenty of bicyclists that run stop signs, you know, that run red lights, that go against traffic. You know, there will always be those. And, you know, it's funny. And I know in Redondo, they really crack down on that. You're riding your bike, you know. I see bicyclists pulled over all the time being given tickets. You know,
if that's what it
most
takes.
Most of the time, yeah.
I like that. I mean, I got to tell you, and I'm I was a bike rider for many years. I need to get back to it. But, and I got stopped in Hermosa for running a stoplight. There wasn't anybody there, and there were three of us, and we just plowed right through. And we all got stopped. I mean, I should have kept going, but I turned around and came back with those guys. And cost me $200 and some. I should have just left them. But it's interesting because the bike coalition groups will stand up in front of city council and say how they want the same rights as drivers. Well, mm-hmm. if you want the same rights to the road, then you also have to adhere to the same rules and regs
yes.
that these guys. And so, you know, it always bugs me. You know, I even said that one time to a guy. I said, man, this guy, there were four cars at a four-way stop, and this bicyclist just blew right through it.
Yep.
You know? And
yep.
he goes, I said, that should be wrong. And he goes, are you kidding? Bike, I do that all the time. I'm going, oh, man. And this guy was part of a bike coalition. You know, and I just go, geez, and you're
up there telling us that we need to. The South Bay Bicycle Coalition is a great organization, and they do fight for bicyclist rights, but
yep.
they also offer a lot of classes on bike etiquette, you know, and the rules
right.
of the road. You
right.
know, I obey
And
the
I
rules.
Think that's really
I,
it.
I stop.
I think that's
I
really
stop.
It. There needs to be, you know, it's kind of like the homeless. I believe they're need, you know, wondering, what do I do with this $900 million? I'm telling, geez, give me $200 million of it, and I'll show you what to do with it. You know, first of all, it needs to be a huge educational campaign out to all of the local businesses, you know, that a handout is not a hand up. And if it's during the week, call these numbers. If it's on the weekend, call this number and all of those things. And start calling and get these guys into a database that's centrally located, that database, which is what they're trying, which is what they're doing, so that everybody has access to all these people who are homeless and where they're from and what they, if they're on medication, things like that. Well, same thing with biking, because I still find people who just, it's not that they're, you know, just flaunt, you know, what do you say, you know,
flaunting the rules of the road,
flaunting the rules,
ignoring them. Yeah.
They just are ignorant of the rules.
A lot of them are, yeah.
You know, and so I had a kid the other day, he said, now let's see, I'm supposed to ride against traffic and run with traffic, right? And I said, nope, it's the other way around.
Nope.
He goes, no, that can't be. And I'm going, yes, it's the other way around. Run against, ride with. So,
right.
you know, just little things like that. You know, and people just don't know they're not supposed to ride on the sidewalks. They grew up riding on the sidewalks. They're going to continue, you know. And that's why you wear a helmet. If you're supposed to be on the street, you better have a helmet.
Yeah.
And
well, that's you know, another thing. You know, isn't it the law that anybody under 16 has to be wearing a helmet, whether mm-hmm. it's a skateboard, a scooter, or a bicycle? And yet, I still see a ton of kids, you know, mm-hmm. running around without them. You know, and
well,
that's on their parents.
There you go. There's the enforcement issue. If there is a policeman there, he might stop them. But I mean, I could sit here and look out my window on this street and. You know, we just don't have the resources where we control every street every 20 minutes, you know, have someone cruising by there. We just don't have the resources.
True.
Which
True.
Is,
so
by the way, speaking of resources, are you hearing, obviously Hermosa did it. I'm hearing more and more about these cities going towards getting rid of their police and fire and going to county.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know why?
Money.
You know,
yeah.
Well, it's because of this pension tsunami.
Well,
that's
what I mean. This pension
yeah.
tsunami is coming up, and these are one of the ways that they want to handle it, and it'll save them all this money. But my gosh, if there's ever a serious emergency, we're going to be last on the list to receive any kind of first responder help if it's a county program.
Yeah, well, as you said, Hermosa did it. Redondo is looking into it.
Manhattan Beach is looking into it.
Oh, Manhattan Beach is looking into it, too.
That's what I've heard. Yep.
And, you know, the last election cycle for Palos Verdes has their own police department, and the residents got to vote on that in the last election cycle, whether or not to go sheriff or to keep their police department, and they voted to keep their police department.
Oh, so that's a ballot issue? That's
well,
not a city decision?
For Palos Verdes it is. Every city's mm. different. You know,
yeah.
you know, in Redondo, if you're going to change zoning, people have to vote on it. You
right.
know, every city is different in that regard. So, but Palos Verdes had the opportunity to vote on it, and they did. And,
well, I can't imagine any city voting to turn loose of a police or fire, you know.
You know, you Well, you know, we know all of our local police and fire. You know.
Well,
them.
That's my point. There's a connection, and you feel like they're there for you. And
Yeah. You
don't have to call a number and have them come to you from another area. Even though there would be a task force here, but the thing is, the county could pull them away. You know.
Right. Right.
And you'd be left, you know, with a skeletal crew.
It's interesting because we just had National Night Out earlier mm-hmm. this month, and I, so help me God, we must have had half the Torrance police force stop by at different points during the evening.
Yeah.
And it's great because when you're driving around your town and you're stopped at a light and a police car pulls up, you're like, oh, hi. You know, I mean, I know a dozen of the officers on the Torrance police force by name. You know, I know a bunch of them by sight, but I know a bunch of them by name.
But I'm wondering, we should have, okay, Jackie, Joe, we should have somebody from the Hermosa, well, from the city of Hermosa on to talk about how that's working. Or who would be an objective person to have on? Someone who could look at it both sides, because the city's obviously going to say, oh, it's working great. We're, you know, saving a lot of money. And then, of course, the police who are there are not going to say anything bad about it because that's their jobs. And then, obviously, on this, if you have a police officer or fireman on this side, fire person on this side, you know, they don't want to say anything because it's their job. And so who do you talk to get a real honest assessment?
Well, it's interesting. You know, you would say the residents, but as you just said, when the stuff hits the fan, if you have a fire department that's going to get called elsewhere and it's not, you aren't their priority,
yeah.
You know, if and when that happens, that will be,
yeah.
that will be
well,
where
it's all about,
things come to light.
It's all about greater good. It's all about greater good. And when you
right.
have your own police and fire, the greater good is your community. If you are a county, the greater good
right.
is that county. Okay,
right.
And so if you have this huge earthquake and the 105 collapse, they're pulling all of our people over to the 105.
Right.
They're
right.
not going to stick around here and
right.
and think about how we protect traffic or say you had the Watts riots, okay?
Yeah.
They pull all of our resources over there, and who's here to protect us, you know? Our businesses,
a skeleton crew.
And because you would send it, like in the forest fire on the fires up north and Cleveland National Forest and all of that, we send people to those fires, but you send a couple of people or a few people, but you don't send the bulk of your team. Whereas in this case, it would be you'd leave a couple of few people behind and you'd send the bulk of your team if you were a county.
Right.
That's
right,
my perception,
right.
by the way. That's why I'd love to have someone on this show. And if anybody out there knows of someone who could talk to objectively about it, please call us. I would love to have someone on the show to talk about the pros and cons of going county versus staying local.
Yeah, well, you know, I know for a fact that on 9/11, all of those firehouses in Manhattan and the Bronx and they all went to ground zero, and I know because I have friends, firemen, that were mm-hmm. in Nassau County, the Rockaways, Suffolk, that came into the city and went to the firehouses that were empty because all those firemen went down to ground zero. So it was like they pulled
yeah.
people from the outer areas to, you know, everybody that was near went to it, and then they brought in people to handle the firehouses that were empty because –
right.
They were working on it. So we have similar stuff here. What do they call it when you share resources? Mutual aid.
Yeah.
Mutual aid.
But I right. And we do that all the time, you know.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, right. Do you have still the same mutual aid relationship? If we have our own fire and county's doing Hermosa, can we call on Hermosa to help us out?
That was one of the things. I don't think there's a mutual aid agreement to where they used to be.
We really need to find somebody to talk to. I would love to objectively figure out who we – you know, I can ask – we have a – I still see Bob Espinosa as a retired police chief, and I should ask him who would be a good person to talk to about that.
Objective
point of view.
Yeah. It's very. You got to be careful. It's so funny that you mentioned that. I ran into Chief Metzger, the Redondo fire chief, at an event last weekend, and I said, "Hey, you got to come on the show because," as I said, "I want you to talk about this, you know, going county with the fire." And so I had contacted him Monday morning. I said, "Hey, let me schedule for this day." He said, that time, 8 to 9, he said, "He, you know, that's that's an important point in his day." And he said he just can't do it. So
yeah,
I was like, okay, so we'll see. We'll see if we can. Yeah, no, we need to find somebody that can, as you said, speak about it objectively, because it doesn't seem like there can be an objective person, you know,
right,
that he's to the budget, the people are looking to their safety.
Right.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. So,
and I'm not
we'll
even sure a fire chief, a retired fire chief, can be, you know, he'd probably send us to someone.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but
it would be interesting.
There's got to be a city planner or somebody with that kind of experience who could speak to it.
Maybe somebody from another city that has already done it.
Well, but who from another city?
Well,
I mean,
a resident,
it's still the same issue. Right. It's still the same issue. You talk to the city, they're going to say, yeah, we love it. You're going to talk to the fire people, they're not going to say anything because that's their job. Like, you know,
and
you don't.
And the residents are
going to say, yeah, we wish we had our local fire department. You know, I mean, you kind of already know what they're going to say. The best way is if you can find stats, if you can get stats on, which they are doing. I'm sure that all the cities are doing that, getting the stats of has the delivery time, has the arrival times increased, you know, performance and all of that.
Well, they still have their firehouse in Hermosa.
Right.
It's just they have different badges on their uniforms. It's just not Hermosa Beach Fire. It's
But one of my questions would be is, when you talk about mutual aid, for instance, because it is the county, is there now more of a bureaucracy where they can't make the decision there on the fly? They have to go through a chain of command, and by that time, you know, the house is burned down or whatever. But, I mean, they have to go through a chain of command to make any decisions. In other words, is there a lot more bureaucracy now involved in making?
We need to find
out.
We need to find out. Yeah. You're right. We need to talk to somebody. We need to talk to somebody.
So
we
listen,
need to
you saw
out.
In my Happy Friday. You know, I hope everybody is taking the poll, because the city really is looking into changing Sepulveda to PCH, and there's three pretty distinct camps, those that want to remain the same, remain Sepulveda, those that want PCH, and then those who just don't care either way. And so we did a grassroots poll of businesses along Sepulveda at the Chamber, turned that over to council. Council used it when they had their discussion, and now council is on the city website. You can go and weigh in whether or not you want the change to happen, or, you know, leave it, you know, whatever you want. But they're polling everybody. That's for everybody. And then they're also sending notices to all the businesses along Sepulveda to see what they think. And then this will come up again in September, early November, maybe.
I did the poll online. Sure. I voted to keep it, to make it PCH, only because I like continuity.
And
it has nothing to do with GPS. It has. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about. It was funny because I was up, coming from. I must have been the airport or something, and I said, "Oh, PCH," and then I got to Manhattan and it was Sepulveda. I just like continuity. That's all it is to it for me.
No, that's and I would say, based on the polls that we did at the Chamber, and we're not taking sides. You know, some people think we are. We're not taking sides. We're just presenting, you know, just the facts, ma'am. And it's pretty overwhelmingly in favor of making the change, simply for what you said, the logistics, the continuity,
I understand. I know that Sepulveda, big family, big name, ton of history for Southern California. I get all that. But then again, Pacific Coast Highway is a pretty iconic name. You know, me personally, as I said, just continuity. But I see both sides. You know, there's a
lot
of history.
Well, next time you're here at the office, I'll give you a copy of Jan's book about Sepulveda, the history of Sepulveda, that she wrote, Jan Dennis, which is our local historian. And what's interesting is I read it again, looking at how it became Sepulveda and all of that, just to once again refresh my memory on that. And, you know, the Sepulveda family, the ranch itself was way up north in the valley. This was just a part of the edges of the ranch that came down through here. And so It was called Sepulveda, you know. But going back to the early 1900s, they have been trying to link this with PCH, with Pacific Coast Highway, and make it all Pacific Coast Highway. They've been doing that. They've been trying that for many years. So, I mean, there is, and I get where it's been Sepulveda and people have grown up with Sepulveda, and that's fine. But, you know, it's hard to hang your hat on the Sepulveda family when they lived way out in the valley. That'd be like hanging your hat on someone who lives in Chatsworth, you know.
Right.
It's hard to say that PCH is not a part of our history because they've been trying to link PCH up through the South Bay all the way, and they've done it, obviously, in some areas, since the turn of the 20th century, of the 19th century. And historically, we have had name changes. It used to be El Camino Real, and then it became Sepulveda in 1932. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like precedent isn't there either. And then if the mm-hmm. hotels and the restaurants and people think that, you know, it adds it's a marketing benefit, then fine. You know, if small businesses feel that it's a hardship because they have to change stationery and all that, well, to me, there's a work around that too by lowering your business taxes or license fees for one year.
License fees, yeah.
You know, things like that.
Yeah, there's a way around it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think overwhelmingly it's going to be in favor of. I think overwhelmingly it's going to be in favor of PCH.
Are you guys? Do you have it on the agenda, like for a vote? How will that happen?
It is. I'm trying to remember. Was it later in September? It may be early November that it's going to be back on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would that go to a vote of the residents, or would it be a city council decision?
A council decision.
Council decision. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
Council decision.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It's been before council before and was shot down. You know, they voted against it. So, but
all right.
Where is the poll?
What else?
Where is the poll?
Well, you go on to citymb.info. Citymb.info. www.citymb.info, and look for the open city tab, which is where you can vote on initiatives and give, you know, weigh in on what you think. And there'll be one for renaming Sepulveda PCH. What do you think? And you take the poll. And then any businesses who are listening, if they haven't already gotten something, will be getting something from the city asking for their opinion. So please weigh in. And by the way, it's fine to say either way. You know, if you don't care, if you're a law officer, you really don't care if it's PCH or Sepulveda, then, you know, there's a box for that too. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like it. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to mention something. We are going to be adding two new shows to the South Bay programming.
Wow.
We have a new executive producer, Ryan. How do you say it? Razan?
LeBron Razan.
LeBron Razan. Okay, Ryan. Not LeBron Razan. It's Ryan Razan. And we're going to be doing a new show, a new legal show with Deanne Chase of Chase Law Group in Manhattan Beach, and another financial show with Chris Castigar from Credit First. And we are just in the process of ironing out all the details, and hopefully we're going to start pretty soon with that. They're going to be on
Tuesday and Wednesday. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And we want to promote Deanne as much as possible. Deanne has been a fantastic supporter of the Manhattan Beach Chamber Chase Law Group. And, in fact, we did a seminar with her last night at WeWork. Her and Dan Stover, we did a chamber seminar on employees in the workplace, you know, keeping happy employees and what you need to be aware of and maybe how to engage your employees and things like that. And little bit about employee law, which is why Deanne was one of the presenters too. And really great with the way we set it up. It was just a great casual discussion. We had a number of businesses there, and then Deanne and Dan were up front, and they just talked, and we just had, you know, raise your hand, and it was very casual, very nice, very warm, and Deanne did, as always, never disappoints. She just did fantastic. She's a great presenter, a great speaker, and she's whip smart. So.
Yeah. No, we're very excited to be working with her. Very excited. Chase Law Group.
Yep.
We're working on a name. We're working on a name for the show. We got a lot of fun ones, so.
Yeah, I'll bet. And using the word chase?
Yeah. A bunch of different options.
Have you been chased? Maybe you need a lawyer.
Maybe. Chased by the law. Chasing the law. Yeah.
I like
right,
chasing
right,
the
right.
law. Chasing the law. Something like that.
Yeah, so
you
we're, going to have a little
come and
fun
relax
it.
With us at the Chase Lounge talk show. You don't. Well, here, you know, because here you think about okay, truth in advertising. When you name a show like that, what we did it wasn't with Chase Law Group, but we did a. We are going to do some things with Deanne coming up though, seminars on copyright, trademark, things like that. But we did one with the Maloney Group, who are also big supporters of the chamber, and we called it "You Don't." The chamber titled the seminar "You Don't Know What You Don't Know."
Right, that's a takeoff. What's his name? The ex Secretary of State. That was a great line that he had. We know what we know. We know what we don't know, and we don't know what we don't know.
Holy crap.
Donald Rumsfeld. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
and he was talking about, like, I think it was the Iran nuclear thing.
The
WMD.
Right.
And he's like, you know, it was a great speech. You know, it's so funny. Sometimes I go back and I look it up on YouTube to watch it because the way you said it is so great. You know, I don't know if it was a prepared speech or if it was just off the cuff, but it's used a lot now.
Well, yeah. But that's what, you know, Deanne and her staff will point out. I mean, and it's not the fun part of any business. Certainly isn't the fun part of any business, but it's important as, you know, and just as important as learning how to use Instagram and Facebook, you know. Otherwise, you might, Instagram and Facebook may not bankrupt you, but a mistake with one of your employees or a client or whatever could bankrupt you.
Yeah, no, I had a meeting with Deanne a couple of months ago. I sat down with her and we went through a bunch of, if you own a business, you know, how you need to protect yourself. You know, everything from insurance to contracts to, you know, all the employee stuff. There's a lot to know. She can pave the way for you. She can make it a lot easier than it would be if you didn't have her help. So we're very, very excited to be working with her. And we got to wrap this up. It's Labor Day weekend.
Oh, my gosh.
It's Labor Day weekend.
I would like to say, speaking of Deanne, speaking of all those things, you don't know what you don't know. We judge those seminars by when they walk out, they are scared to death. And, you know, and I've got one coming up. I'm talking to a guy at the FBI, and I've seen him in action. So this guy's great, Ron. And I've seen him in action. He's great presenter, personable. He's not your typical what you would envision a FBI guy
G-man.
Up there,
G-man.
You know. Yeah, exactly. And he is going to be talking about cybersecurity, and you will walk out of there scared to death.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. That sounds
unbelievable.
Fun.
Especially when you talk to someone like Keith, the CEO of Connecta, when they get 250,000 attempts a day or a week at trying to get into
hacking.
Their system.
Yeah.
Hacking.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the kind of – we don't see that, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what they're up against, you know. So anyway, a great chamber chat. I love chatting with you guys, and I really thank you for being there for us to do this show. I really love doing it, I think it's a real asset for – We need to make more noise about it.
Right.
We will.
Right.
We will. All right, Joe, you got to wrap this up. We got 20 seconds.
we're doing great, and we're looking forward to a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Have fun, everyone. Be safe. Enjoy walking around in Hermosa, and just have fun, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye, everybody.
Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Labor Day. Bye.
Bye.